I am altering the deal. Pray I do not alter it any further. Welcome to Primary Technology, the show about the tech news that matters. This week, we have reviews of the new M3 MacBook Air. Jason has it in hand, so we're going to get to talk about that. Huge drama between Epic Games and Apple in the EU and the iOS 17.4 update. Also, Apple was fined $2 billion and more. This episode is brought to you by OneTap, one of my favorite apps. I use it all the time for quick access to links, text, and documents on your iPhone. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I'm one of your hosts, Stephen Robles, and of course, joining me, as always, my good friend Jason Aitin. How's it going, Jason?
It's good. It's been a long morning, but it's good.
As we record, so listeners and viewers, Jason is going to publish his M3 MacBook Air review live on the air. It's going to be very exciting. He's going to click a button. We won't even be able to see it because it's off camera, but he's going to do it, and then the review will be up, and I'll be able to share my screen, and then you could see it. Exciting. Yeah. You have the M3. Did you get the 13-inch or 15-inch?
I have the 13-inch. Yes. I'll explain that when we get to the... I reviewed the 13-inch.
Okay. Okay, very good. And as we record, so there's now 6 minutes before Jason can publish this article and I can show it on screen. So we have to cover 6 minutes here, and that's what we're going to do. But it's not a problem because so many of you, again, left 5-star ratings and reviews in Apple Podcasts. We really appreciate it. We're like in the top 100-ish tech podcasts, you know, when we release a new episode. And after, you know, a couple months and 10 episodes, it's very kind of you guys to keep supporting the show. So thank you for that. One other ask, we are 14 subscribers away from 500 on YouTube.
Ooh.
So even if you don't watch it, just head over to YouTube and subscribe to the channel because we're about to hit 500. Very exciting. 5-star shout outs, which first of all, Zach White, who listens to the show, he actually sent a GIF of the movie that I quoted in last episode, which I find to be a very fun game, which I think today's quote is a little easier to find.
Yeah.
But last week was The Transporter. And so he sent me a GIF of that. So that was fun. But 5-star reviews. And yes, every single one of them said they put their battery percentage on, Jason. Every single one of them said it.
I just appreciate the consistency in how wrong you were.
It is very consistent. Anyway, but Pablo Felix Jr., how's it going, Pablo? JD76 dollar signs. Mama Seat Route. I don't know where these names come from. Do you know, it's been so long since I've created like an iTunes or Apple ID. Do you know how these names
are? They just their Apple ID? Is that what that is? Because I can't actually figure out how to leave a review, so I don't know for sure. But if I do, I'm assuming it would just be like the letters before the at iCloud or whatever.
I mean, I would think so. That also seems like a huge security flaw if that's what Apple's doing. Like, basically,
it also seems ridiculous that this might actually be some people's use Apple IDs.
Well, and some of these, even in today's 5-star reviews, there's spaces between the words, which you can't have for an Apple ID.
That's true.
Anyway,
okay.
RH Coat, battery percentage on. Smiley D62, battery percentage on. Gamman 114, and this you can kind of see like when the reviews start coming in after the episode releases, because now we have people saying whether they use Apple Maps or Google Maps, which is great because we're going to talk about that in our personal tech section. But uses Apple Maps. There's another language review. I can't read it, but thank you for that. They use Waze for driving, Apple for walking in transit, which I thought was interesting. Alvin B. Richard Scary, which I think my kids have seen his show. So Richard Scary, he uses Apple Maps. Unbelievable, don't update. Again, I don't think it's an Apple ID. That's a sentence. I don't know what that means. SPS1's battery on. Monkman 02, battery on. The Manny Rosario has some annoyances. I don't know if you can have that Apple ID. Lorb's battery on. Dirk Pitt 73. He said the other guy is great. Look at that. Called you out.
It's good.
Did you see that I did the whole transcript for the last episode as the other guy?
I did. And didn't it get like picked up by Transistor or something like that? Or I don't even. Yeah.
Yes. Thank you for sharing, Justin. Yes. Yes, it did.
Yeah.
I won't do that every week. I'll go actually.
That's all right.
P. Marriott, who is concerned about my caffeine take. It's okay. I'm concerned too. Speaking of which, I'm going to drink some coffee.
I promise you that when I saw Monkman 02, I swear that, because I do look at these, I glance through them to make sure that I haven't made anyone else mad. And when I saw that, I swear I thought that said Mark Gurman. And I thought, not only would that be cool if he was listening, Mark Gurman, a reporter for Bloomberg, but also I was just feeling super vindicated. And I thought like maybe we had a scoop that he has his battery percentage on. But no shade to Monkman. Thank you for leaving a review and thank you for leaving your battery percentage on. But I did for a moment think, wow, we have a story. So
that would be awesome. Listen, Mark Gurman, if you're listening, we would like to know that.
I agree.
He included one of my shortcuts videos in his newsletter one time about the action button. So, you know, we're like one degree away.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. And BGus88 is the last 5-star review. Thank you all for those. Keep them coming. If you haven't rated the show, you can do that. The audience is growing slowly every week, and so thank you for that. You know, 11 episodes in, and been great. So really appreciate everyone, and go subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. Now, Jason is sitting in front of, I don't know the square inches of displays you're sitting in front of, but right now you have an M3 MacBook Air and two studio displays. Is that right?
That is true. I have, I feel like I could actually launch a maybe not a spaceship, but something. I could launch something. I could set my my shed on fire for sure if I tripped over a cord.
But if you open the MacBook Air lid, then one of those shut off.
Well, that's true. They are not currently connected to the MacBook Air. They're actually connected to my MacBook Pro because I thought, what could be better than, you know, recording a podcast that we also record for YouTube with a loaner review unit that doesn't actually have everything. This is the midnight. No one will be able to see this before 9 o'clock, you know. And we're not even supposed to talk about the review time, but by the time anyone sees this or hears that, it will be after that.
It'll be after. That's so we'll the be beauty fine. Of this recording.
Yeah.
We're now seconds away. I know you're watching the clock and I'm also watching the clock. It is
Steven's
eight.
Mostly just stalling. You know what we could have done, Steven? We could have been like, could we?
Oh, it's 9 o'clock. Wait, it's 9 a.m. You gotta publish it. You gotta publish it. Just get to it. So right now, Jason is going to whatever system he uses to publish articles. I don't know. And he is going to publish his M3 MacBook Air review at the exact embargo time. And then he's going to send me the link.
This is the worst.
And then I'm going to open that link.
This is the worst podcasting of all time.
But no, this is exciting because this is like a live embargo release.
Now, there you go.
I've never been a part of this.
So in case some people are probably wondering, like, couldn't you just schedule your review for whatever time you've agreed to publish it? And the answer is yes, you could. But I promise you no one does, because there is no CMS in the world that any of us who use them every day trust enough to honor that. Now, most of the articles that I write, I do schedule. Right, but when it's a review that you've agreed not to publish before a certain time, that's the way it works. Companies will say, hey, would you like this piece of hardware to review? In agreement, you agree that you'll publish them at a certain time. That's fine. Like, I have no problem honoring an embargo like that. So you go ahead and you just do that. But when you write your review and you are paranoid like I am that the CMS might just one day decide, we'll just publish everything at midnight. We'll just do it. And then Jason doesn't get anything. Listen, it's not unforeseen that kind of thing could happen. Or worse, I might just put the wrong date in. So anyway, all of that was simply just to not just give you a behind the scenes peek, but to stall long enough for the internet to send the link that I sent to Steven so that Steven could open it. There you go.
Here it is. Here it is. The M3 MacBook Air review. That was very exciting. This is exactly the embargo time. Yeah, I trust YouTube for published dates, I will say. I've scheduled a couple YouTube videos at an embargo time, but that's, you know, it's YouTube. I get it. Mm. All right, so you have the 13-inch M3 MacBook Air. You've had it for a few days. This is your big review. I've already read it because I gave it a preview. Oh, maybe I shouldn't say that.
That's fine. We're good.
That's okay. Okay, I don't want to get
He speed read it while I was stalling. That's really why I kept talking.
Exactly. And so here it is. If you're watching youtube.com/@primarytechshow, there's that M3 MacBook Air connected to two studio displays powering both, which is a new feature, standout feature of this. But if you open the lid of the MacBook Air, then one of them turns off. Is it random which one turns off, or is it consistent?
I did not ask the question. I do believe that there is a system to it. I did not spend enough time plugging and unplugging displays to figure out which one, because the first time I did it, I actually did take a photo of it, which is really weird because people just see a photo of a laptop with the screen open and one screen on and one screen off. It's kind of meaningless. But
it doesn't make any sense. That's
but then I did it again later, but I don't actually know if I plugged the two cords into the same port, right? But here's the thing. That doesn't seem to matter in terms of the computer recognizing the position of them, which port I've plugged into it, because I'm assuming they have like a serial number and the computer's just like, oh yeah, you wanted this one over there and this one over there. So it's pretty cool. But it did know that so I'm using the MacBook Pro right now. This is turning out to be a review of multi-displays, not actually the M3 MacBook Air. But
no, we'll get to the Air.
But it does know that my laptop is in the middle. I don't know how it knows that, but it just, when I move my mouse across, it just was like, oh yeah, you must have that there. So anyway.
Well, the universal control, like if you do the little control center displays, I mean, you could always move it around. Like it assumes where certain things are. It uses magic. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right. Well, tell me. So you reviewed. I do not have the M3 MacBook Air, so I cannot speak to it, but you reviewed it. Supposedly it's less fingerprinty. Tell me about it.
If you've ever used an M2 MacBook Air, you've used an M3 MacBook Air. It's just this one has one more number. It's an M3. But the thing is, the M2 MacBook Air, and I wrote this at the time, was basically the best laptop I thought that Apple had ever made for most people. Right now, I have the M3 MacBook Pro sitting here. It's a better overall computer. Steven has
M3 Pro.
You have a Mac Studio, but you also have a Mac Studio. When the Mac Studio gets the M3 Ultra in it, it'll be obviously way better than this. That's fine. The M3 version is the same. I mean, if you've seen an M2, you've seen the M3. Although if you've seen a Midnight M2, you probably had to turn away in horror because of the fingerprints. And the M3 is not as fingerprinty. It's definitely an improvement. Okay. Probably not as fingerprint resistant as the Space Gray or the Silver or even the Starlight, but it is definitely better than the previous version. The previous version, people, like, you never see them in public because the owners are ashamed to take them in public because they're just covered with grease.
I do see it. Whenever I've been to an Apple store, I see the Midnight, and if it's like a clean Midnight, it looks nice. Like, I'll see it on the table, and I'm like, oh man, it's a nice color. But then if you go see a different Midnight and it's all like, a lot of people have touched it and Apple hasn't gotten a chance to like buff it out.
Yeah.
It was pretty gross.
It is pretty bad. Different. Although it has Wi-Fi 6E. That's like the other big upgrade to it. So reviewing it, normally you can't review a product after having it for only a few days. But the thing is, I already knew everything about this computer because I've been using an M2 MacBook Air for a while. And before that, an M1 MacBook Air. They do the same sort of thing. Like, there are probably some things that I'll find over some time because I'll continue using this for a while. So the gist of my review, though, is that Apple essentially is at this phase where, yes, they're just giving spec bumps to these things, but that's fine because they're already so good that they don't need to like completely reinvent technology to make these laptops better.
Right.
But they are addressing the things that people seem to care about, which in this case, the dual display, people just sort of look at it like, why? It has a monitor and you can plug it into a monitor. That's two displays. How come I can't just have two of them external? And now you can if the lid is closed. Which still seems kind of arbitrary, but hey, it's the thing that people wanted, and Apple is addressing those things. There was a time, remember the butterfly keyboard, where Apple did not care what people wanted. Johnny Ive was just like, this is the way. Actually, he did it in a British accent. This is the way.
Aluminium.
Yes, exactly. And that was just what you got. And if you wanted to use an Apple product, you got whatever Johnny Ive thought you should have. Now, at least they are changing that. I guarantee you the fingerprints was by far the biggest complaint. And I guarantee you number two was the dual display support. I don't know. Somebody's going to argue with me that that's not the correct order. But they've addressed both of those things, and it's great. It's exactly what you need.
Right. So it looks like a great laptop. I mean, and Apple has said the world's best-selling laptop. I think they claim it pretty regularly, or the world's most popular laptop. A couple questions.
Well, let me answer a question you didn't ask. So
yeah, please.
What does this thing do that the previous versions don't? Well, the answer is basically nothing. Although Apple will tell you, and actually in their press release they said that this is the best consumer laptop for AI.
Oh, right.
Anything about AI in my review? Because it's completely like, it's just words that you put when you have nothing else to say about a product because it's just that good. So you have to come up with things. Because it's like, you know what the M3 MacBook Air is really good at? Running Microsoft Copilot inside Microsoft 365. Now, the thing you have to understand about that is none of that happens on your computer.
It's all in the cloud.
Every computer, I told Steven, I have a 2013 MacBook Air that doesn't even have a Retina screen and I think has an Intel Core i3 with, 4 gigs of RAM. And it will run at the same because it's all happening on an Azure server somewhere else in, out in the world. So as long as you have Wi-Fi, it'll be just fine. So I don't know, now I did put Whisper, Mac Whisper, which is the transcription service that uses ChatGPT. And I did compare it to both the M3 Max MacBook Pro and an M2 MacBook Air.
Yeah.
And as you would expect, it came in between them. The Max is like way faster. And I think the reason is it has like three times the GPU cores. So you would expect it to be faster.
Right.
Exactly. And it's a little bit faster than the M2 was. Not a lot. My back of the napkin, it was probably about 15% faster. So if that's a thing you do all the time, you probably still shouldn't buy this if you have an M2. And actually, that's the other thing that was interesting. Sorry, I feel like I'm rambling, but I just want to make this one more point.
No, you have the review.
I heard some feedback from people before, after this was announced. Hey, why does Apple keep comparing this thing to Intel MacBook Airs? No one still has them. Yes, they do. A lot of people still have Intel MacBook Airs. You know why? Because normal people keep their computers for 5 or 6 or 7 years. People like Steven and I are not normal.
That's true.
Most people are not staring at two laptop screens and two studio displays and recording a podcast talking about them. Most people buy a computer that works for them and they use it until they can't turn it on anymore, right? So there are a lot of people who are still using Intel MacBook Airs, and for them, this will be, I don't want to say life-changing, but it'll certainly be work-changing. It'll be mind-blowing. And even if you're using an M1 MacBook Air, which is an amazing computer, I personally think that that's the other thing we should talk about is it's gone. They killed it. It's dead. You can't buy an M1 anymore. And I feel like that's sad because that was like the iconic design. But even if you have an M1, this is like 60-70% faster. It'll be amazing. If you have an M2, unless you absolutely desperately need dual display support, in which case, what are you buying a MacBook Air for? I don't know. Don't, you know, it's just, it's fine.
Yeah.
Keep it for 5 years and you'll be good.
So a couple things. One, to the point of like people use computers until they die. I had a text the other day. I never responded. I should probably respond to them. But it was someone that I helped with their like iMacs. It's like a real estate office and they had a bunch of iMacs and they were old Intel iMacs. But still the thin displays. So like if you wanted to do any work on it, you had to peel off the display. And I actually swapped all the hard drives in those to SSDs. Because they, if you remember, the iMacs used to just come with hard drive standard until...
Fusion drive.
The Fusion drive. But these weren't even Fusion drives. These were like the 5400 RPMs, like base model hard drives.
Okay.
And everyone complained that they were slow in this real estate office. So I went in there, and this is when I learned how to peel off the screen of an iMac to replace the hard drive with an SSD. The first time I did it, totally screwed up the display when I actually put it all back together. The display had a big green strip down the middle. And I was like, oh, my words. I had to go on eBay, buy a replacement display for this iMac. But anyway. But he texted me just the other day with one of those same iMacs that has an Intel i5 and is still running the SSD I put in there like 6 years ago. It has like the power symbol when he turns it on, where it's just like, it looks like the power button and a bunch of text.
Yeah.
Which is basically the Mac telling you like, it's done. Like it's tired of working and it wants to go to the eternal sleep. It just wants to be done. Yeah, so I have to have the heart to tell them, like, it's time to update this iMac. Yeah. But anyway, to your point, people keep computers a long time. They'll probably be comparing it to Intel until what? Probably the M5 until they start only comparing it to the M1. You know, if it's that annual cadence. But the other thing you said, the M1 MacBook Air, which was the last wedge-shaped MacBook Air, which has been the iconic design ever since Steve Jobs pulled it out of Manila envelope, it is gone. So you can't get the wedge shape anymore. It is just a square side. There was a bunch of people online kind of bemoaning the loss of the wedge of the MacBook Air.
I wrote a whole article about it.
You did?
I wrote a whole piece. Yeah, because I really did think like it is a... For a long time, even after the M2 came out, I still recommended the M1 to a lot of people because for $1,000, it was such an incredible, $899 for education, it was such an incredible machine. It was, in my opinion, it was, I think I sort of said this before, but it was like, you got the best of both worlds. You got that iconic design that people have loved. I mean, and it's hard to think back and remember this now, but that is the design that defined what a laptop was going to look like, not just a Mac laptop. Every laptop copied the MacBook Air for a decade, right? Like if you were to review a Dell, you know, XPS or a Lenovo ThinkBook, I've got this Asus behind me somewhere. I'm not going to turn around and try to grab it. They all are the same form factor essentially, right?
Right.
And it's gone. And now I asked Apple about it. They're no longer going to be selling it, but you can find them. Obviously, places like Best Buy, Amazon, whoever still has them will continue to sell them through their stock. And right now, if you go to the refurbished store, Apple still has them available there. And honestly, a refurbished M1 MacBook Air might be the single best deal, like sure thing you could buy for someone. Like if you just have someone who needs a computer and you don't want to have them bother you about needing a computer again for like 7 years, buy them a refurbished M1 MacBook Air.
So I want to show the refurb store in a second because I do think some of those deals are amazing. But since this is the end of the wedge design, here's literally the moment when Steve Jobs, we're watching, if you go to youtube.com/@primarytechshow, you can see it. This is Steve Jobs holding the manila envelope. He was still one of the best, Jason.
Like, oh yeah, absolutely.
One of the best like presenters. And look, he just pulls it out. There it is. The original MacBook Air.
It was mind blowing to people that you could pull a laptop because if you remember, even the titanium PowerBook, in the other PowerBooks that came after that, I mean, those things were like, they were chunky boys. They were, you know, this thing was ridiculous. Although the original one is the one that had the little port you had to pull down to get to the little door to pull down. That was not good, but they fixed it pretty quick.
Jason, I mean, listen, we don't have to go on a whole tangent here, but like just watching a Steve Jobs presentation of a product, it's just a shot of nostalgia. Is that the original?
No, but it is like from like 2012. So it's like not that far afterwards. So,
but Jason, Steve Jobs, the MacBook Air, the original iPad, obviously the iPhone. I do feel, you know, I've seen some people talk about this. I do feel like I've not seen one of those charisma charged, super inspirational moments. And again, there hasn't been a lot of in-person events. There's not really been any in-person events where we watching at home hear the audience.
Right.
You know, because even the last few WWDCs, it's just been the video, and you were at the last WWC and you were just watching the same video we were watching. And so you don't hear the applause, you don't hear any of that. And I kind of miss it. I kind of hope Apple does one again. But anyway, it feels like Apple's doing two events a year now. Dub and the iPhone event.
I don't know that while Tim Cook is CEO that they'll ever do one again. Oh. No shade to Tim Cook. that's just not his strength, right? Like he's a good sport. We've seen him in the Usher commercial and in the Mother Nature commercial be a very, very good sport, but he is not in that way, Steve Jobs. And that's okay. Like the Apple is in a lot of ways a much, you know, more successful company today than it ever was under Steve Jobs. And a lot of that is to Tim Cook's credit, but getting on stage and demoing a product is just not Tim Cook's specialty. It's never going to be.
Craig Federighi could do it. He could get up there.
He could, but if you think about it, Craig Federighi is not recognizable to the general audience the way that Tim Cook or Steve Jobs was. Most people who our parent probably knew who Steve Jobs was and who would know who Tim Cook is. Craig Federighi is just the weird guy wearing the astronaut costume playing the guitar. Like
the double neck.
It doesn't mean anything to them.
That's fair enough. For one of the videos I did this past week, I was looking through old WWDCs, and one, I ran across the Humane AI people in an Apple keynote doing a demo
because
they both worked at Apple.
Yep.
And just see it like in those old school dubs and Apple events, you know, there's always the long demo section after. And I remember years ago, I kind of didn't care for that because it felt like you showed us the feature, you know, why are we seeing it again?
Yeah.
But honestly, I kind of wish we had some of those slower moments as part of a keynotes now, because I'm sure dubdub this year with Vision OS as another whole section, it's just going to be rapid fire. Just like every feature gets 1 second of screen time. So
yeah, and they move so fast that trying to like take notes while it's happening, I've actually resorted to essentially just like recording the audio to transcribe, because there's just no way I can't. They dive into a section on security and privacy and they cover 47 things, and then 13 seconds later it's over and you're like, I don't know what just happened.
And then they have this slide with like 100 different words and terms that are like, wait a minute, those are all new. Anyway,
when did they say that? Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And there's sometimes big features that are like hidden in screens. But I do want to say, so with the release of now the M3 MacBook Air, this is Apple's refurbished website. And honestly, I've bought lots of devices from here and typically recommend devices from here, especially for someone who's maybe first time Apple user, or, you know, this is just a great place to find good deals. You can still get the M1 MacBook Air refurbished directly from Apple, $760, which is a fairly good deal. I find the M2 MacBook Air, which is the same body style as the M3, also very fast if you want, but this new style, $850 for a base model M2 MacBook Air 13-inch. That seems like an incredible deal, honestly.
No, I agree with you. I mean, those probably are like the bare 256, 8 gigs of RAM. But again, if this is a thing that someone's going to use for college classes or for a high school student because you decided you no longer want to torture them with a Chromebook, those are very, you know, you could buy one for a high school student for $760 and then they could use it for 8 years until they graduate college and it'll be just fine.
That must be medical school if they're using it for 8 years, but
high school, 4 years of high school, I'm saying buy one when, that's what I mean.
I gotcha. So overall, it's a great computer.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I mean, I did run into an issue. I did not write about it because I think we figured out what was wrong, where it was getting very hot, very hot. But I think it's because I had set it up using a Time Machine backup, and that Time Machine backup included some stuff like Visual Studio Code, which is a code editor. And it seems like it was like peaking the CPU, even though I had never opened it on here. So I deleted that off of there. And it has not been a problem. So I'm going to chalk that up to like not the M3's fault. There was something that was going on in the background. But I was like, I actually reached out to Apple because I'm like, this seems bad. Because it's like, even took one of those meat thermometer things that we have, you know, and I put it on there. And it was like 93 degrees or something at the back. And I'm like,
that's warm.
That feels warm. I mean, I don't know how warm a computer should be, but this is warmer than the M2. And in fact, it is warmer than the MacBook Pro. So, but it seems like that's not an M3 issue. It just seems like that was some rogue code.
Okay. Now we have, M3 MacBook Pros and MacBook Airs. We have an M3 iMac. Correct? We have an M3 iMac, but we are still waiting on M3 Mac Mini, any M3s, Mac Studio, and Mac Pros, which maybe WWDC, I think we'll see the M3 Ultra. That's when we saw the M2 last year, if we keep that cadence. But also, the one thing I was looking for every day was the M3 iPad Pros.
Yeah.
We did not get it. Now, real ones will remember, there was a week, it was the week of AirPods Max, so I think it was 2020, maybe it was the year before that, but there was a week where Apple had three press releases in a row.
Yep.
Like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I think it was like AirPods Max. It was maybe a Mac Mini or something and something else. Like it was, you know, just rapid succession. I thought they were going to do it again. I thought they were going to do the hat trick. That's a sports term for everybody who thinks I know nothing about sports. Hat trick. I know it means three something.
Three what?
Three wins, right? Or three?
Three goals.
Three baskets?
Well, three
goals?
No. So if you only score three baskets in a basketball game, you don't actually get credit for that. I mean, you get the points, but they don't give you like a trophy. Okay. That's like soccer. Hockey are generally the sports where they talk about hat tricks. Okay.
So if Michael Jordan wins three NBA championships in a row, is that a hat trick?
I mean, I don't know technically. I don't.
Okay.
Maybe somebody... Nate will send us feedback, I'm sure.
Nate's going to text us as soon as this podcast is
done. I just think it just makes you the greatest of all time. So there, I'm going to cover all my bases.
Okay. This is not a sports podcast. Right. Okay. So that's the M3 MacBook Air. Link to Jason's review and his farewell to the wedge-shaped MacBook Air. Both of those links will be in the show notes.
Yep.
Remember, Apple Podcast cuts off show notes after 4,000 characters. So if you want all the show notes, you can go to primarytech.fm. Which is a great segue because whenever I need to share a URL to our podcast, to a website, to one of my YouTube videos, I use an app, Jason. It's an app called OneTap. Have you heard of OneTap, Jason?
This is the first time I've heard of it, so I'm curious.
Well, let me tell you about OneTap. So OneTap has sponsored today's episode. I've been using it for a long time. I've included it in lots of videos. And so I'm going to be fancy here if you're watching. I'm switching cameras. So OneTap, you can download it. The link will be in the show notes. They have a special deal today, just today only. So I'll get to that in a second. But with OneTap, what you can do is you can create shortcuts. These can be links. It could be documents. It could be photos. And so I'm going to create one right now, actually. So let's say this is a shortcut type and we want to do a URL. Let's say we want to send people to primarytech.fm. You know, they can sign up for bonus episodes or see the full show notes. And I'm going to do I can title this shortcut. Let's just call it PT, Primary Tech Show. And I'm going to add that as a URL. Now, what you do is this is actually a third-party keyboard. And so the first thing you have to do is you go to Settings, General, you go to your keyboard settings. And when you go to Keyboards, here is OneTap. And you want to make sure to allow full access. Privacy and security, everything stays locally on your iPhone. It's not collecting any data or sending any data anywhere. But now that I have that keyboard enabled, let's say I'm in Threads or I'm on Twitter and I want to post something or share the URL to Primary Tech or other URLs that are kind of hard to remember or find, this is actually the third-party keyboard, you know, the little international symbol. I go to the OneTap keyboard and now I have quick access to all links that I share a lot. For instance, whenever I post a picture of me editing in a podcast on iPad Mini, someone asks, what app is that? Which is Ferrite for iPad Mini. And so I actually just have the YouTube video URL about me talking about editing podcasts on iPad as one of my shortcuts here in OneTap. And I also just added the PTS shortcut. And so if I wanted to share the URL to Primary Tech Show, those are just quick ways. And again, this could be URLs, it could be documents, it could be photos. And it has been super convenient to share these URLs just from a third-party keyboard. Now, one of the other things you can do is create groups. So if I go back to the OneTap app, you can create a folder, and we can call this maybe videos or something, because I have multiple videos I kind of routinely share, like smart home and stuff. And now I can add stuff to the videos folder, and now you can save lots of links in different groups. And when I'm over in Threads or wherever I'm going to post, I have my group here in the OneTap keyboard, and I can save all those links so you can access to lots of them in folders or individually. And one other really cool feature of OneTap is if you go to the settings, there's a shortcut usage action. So you can decide what OneTap is going to do after you paste a link from there. And so I can choose to switch back to the default keyboard after I share the URL. So OneTap, I do use it all the time to share links to my videos and other websites. So here's what you do. There's a promo as you listen to this. Today only, literally today only. So if you're listening, you're watching, that's why it pays to listen and watch. The day this comes out, there's a deal. There's no subscription. This is a one-time lifetime purchase. And so if you're adverse to subscriptions, this is the perfect app for you. It's usually $35 as a lifetime subscription, but just today, because Primary Tech, they've sponsored this episode, it's down to $20 for a lifetime subscription. It is a pop-up right when you first open the app. So if you download it today, the first time you open the app, you're going to see this splash screen offering the $20. You have to do it right then. You have the one chance. If you do want to try it out and maybe see what it's all about before you commit to buying it. He's also lowered the price from $50 to $35, so you still get a deal there. But I use it all the time. It's super useful if you're ever sharing links to things, documents, photos, or just text snippets, which I use Text Expander on my Mac, but I find OneTap is just way easier on my mobile devices and on my iPhone. So I've loved OneTap for a long time. Thanks to them for sponsoring the show. So there'll be a link to the OneTap app in the show notes. You can click it there, download it, sign up today, get OneTap. Our thanks to OneTap for sponsoring this episode. You could share your articles. You could share your like author page.
You know what I was just thinking is, but this is great because I've used other text snippet type services. But what I really like about this one is that instead of having to like memorize a little short code that you might have created 3 years ago for whatever the text snippet is, it just shows them all to you and you just tap on them. Yeah. So I'm 100% downloading this and will 100% be using it because it's great.
Very cool. Well, our thanks to OneTap once again for sponsoring this episode. I've got to talk about some drama. Jason, the drama this past week. So iOS 17.4 was launched to the public, which includes the EU's DMA, Digital Market Act, and the third-party app marketplaces, all that stuff that we talked about in past episodes. And so developer Epic Games wanted to get in on the action. And their developer account was shuttered here in the U.S. because of that whole court case that happened, it was 2 years ago or something?
Right.
Or last year? I don't know. Time is a flat circle. I don't even know when it was. But anyway, and so they actually started a new developer account, I believe, in Sweden. And Epic Games was preparing to open a third-party app marketplace on the iPhone in the EU, which was 17.4 and the DMA has made possible. So they went to do it, and when I guess they were able to make the developer account, Apple approved their developer account. And then through a series of emails, which I'm going to show in a second, one from Phil Schiller, and then a statement directly from Apple that was sent to, like, I think 9to5 Mac, The Verge, Mac Rumors, that Apple is restricting their ability to do this. They are not allowing Epic Games to create the third-party app marketplace in the EU, and thus they cannot do the Epic Games store on the iPhone there. Tim Sweeney was very, very mad. Epic Games was very, very mad. This is the blog post on the Epic Games website talking about how they recently announced that they were going to bring the Epic Games Sweden developer account, that Apple approved it, and they were going to make that third-party app marketplace. Epic believes, which I'd be curious your opinion, Tim Sweeney himself, which is the CEO of Epic Games, tweeted about Apple, and, you know, it was, in Phil Schiller's words, colorful commentary on Apple's policies when it comes to the third-party app marketplaces and such, then shut out the Sweden developer account for Epic Games, and now they're no longer able to do it. And Tim Sweeney, in this Epic Games blog post, published email chains between him and Phil Schiller. This last email, if you're watching, we'll put a link to this as well in the show notes. This is Phil Schiller's email to Tim Sweeney. And I think the interesting paragraph here is talking about colorful. It's the second to last paragraph here. It says, "Your colorful criticism of our DMA compliance plan, coupled with Epic's past practice of intentionally violating contractual provisions with which it disagrees, strongly suggests that Epic Sweden does not intend to follow the rules. Another intentional breach could threaten the integrity of the iOS platform, as well as the security and privacy of users." And finally, the statement that Apple then sent to, because Tim Sweeney was trying to say, all because I tweeted something critical of Apple, they've shut our account in Sweden. But the quote that they gave, the statement that Apple gave to these outlets, do you remember who it was directly to?
No, I mean, they didn't send one to me, but that's fine.
So it's, I forget who it was. I know The Verge had it and Mac Rumors had it. But the statement is, "Epic's egregious breach of its contractual obligations to Apple led courts to determine, U.S. courts, mind you, because remember, Apple versus Epic was a U.S. court case,
yep,
that Apple has the right to terminate, quote, any or all of Epic Games' wholly owned subsidiaries, affiliates, and or other entities under Epic Games' control at any time and at Apple's sole discretion. In light of Epic's past and ongoing behavior, Apple chose to exercise that right," which is just such a mic drop, and which is why I posted that gif of Darth Vader being, "I have altered the deal. Pray I do not alter it any further."
Yeah.
Because it does feel a little bit like that. I have thoughts, Jason, but tell me your thoughts.
I'm sure that anyone listening to this is fairly familiar with the story, but so is 2020, that basically Epic put a hot fix into Fortnite,
right,
that introduced their Fortnite was it V-Bucks or whatever they called them at the time.
The V-Bucks in-app.
Their in-app thing. Yeah. You could buy them in-app and they were that was against Apple's policies, but even more frustrating probably to Apple is they were cheaper. Fortnite was going to sell them to you cheaper in the app than you could get them through Apple's in-app payment system, because they were trying to highlight the fact that you're paying more because Apple forces us to go through and pay them 30%. So
they were skirting around Apple's in-app payment system.
App review. And they were skirting around App Review because they didn't submit it through an update. They did a hotfix. Because games have the ability to download new content within the game, right? But that's sort of a don't abuse this privilege kind of a thing. And Epic absolutely did abuse this privilege. And so Apple revoked their developer certificate and pulled Fortnite from the App Store. And then Epic dropped their ad. You remember they ran a commercial, which was mimicking like the 1984 commercial. And then they sued, right? And all of this happened at the exact same time with both Apple and Google. So Epic then sued both Apple and Google. Apple mostly won their lawsuit with Epic. Google basically lost. We won't get into the details of that. But then with the DMA, Epic said, we have applied for a certificate or a developer account in the EU, because EU developers are able to run third-party app stores, and Epic said they were going to. I think the most interesting thing is, if you look at the end of Phil Schiller's email, he goes through all of that and he's like, listen, you've entered into agreements with us before. You have checked the box that says I agree to adhere to all of the terms of the developer agreement. And then you went and did the thing that we all know that you did. And so my question is, it's his very last question. He goes, in plain unqualified terms, please tell us why we should trust Epic this time, which, let's be honest, is a valid question, right? From Phil Schiller. And Tim Sweeney's response is basically like, oh, no, we really, really, really promise. Like, we will comply with all of the terms.
That in plain, first of all, Phil Schiller is an Apple fellow now. Like, he's not an SVP anymore. I think it's...
He does oversee, like, events in the App Store, though, kind of.
Does he? Okay. Yeah. I found that interesting that he is the one emailing Tim Sweeney directly. And so Tim Sweeney's response to Phil Schiller via email, with Phil asking, you know, tell us why we should trust Epic this time, Tim Sweeney's response was, thanks for reaching out.
Yeah.
Which is like one of those like corporate email like memes, like just talking about like the, anyway. Epic and its subsidiaries are acting in good faith and will comply with all terms of current and future agreements with Apple, and will be glad to provide Apple with any specific further assurances on the topic that you'd like. Now, on the face of it, Phil Schiller didn't really ask for anything specific. He asked, should we be able to trust you this time? And Tim Sweeney is saying, yes, you could trust us this time. Do you want a specific assurance? And I assume Phil Schiller did not respond to this email, but I don't know.
I think what happened here is Phil Schiller says, we do not want to do that because you screwed us last time and you did it in a very unethical way, according to Apple, right? I'm not passing judgment on it, whatever.
This is what Apple's judgment.
And Tim Sweeney's response is basically, we pinky swear, which I have four children. And there are many times when I say to them, if I give you some time on the iPad, you didn't do your chores already. Why should I believe that you'll do your chores afterwards? And my kids would say the exact same thing.
Because I will.
We promise to comply with all of the terms of current and future agreements. My kids don't say that, but you get the point. Like, I can understand the skepticism on the part of Apple in that case. Now, I personally don't think Apple should have revoked their developer certificate. I just don't think this is worth the headache for them. That's the thing I don't understand. The longest thing I ever wrote about Apple on the internet was in response to this in August of 2020, I wrote 6,000 words and I called it the Apple thing to do. And I just wrote it. I couldn't publish it at Inc. because they don't let me write things that long. So I actually just published it on my own blog. It might be the last thing I ever published on my blog. And the point was, like, Apple was technically right, but that, you know, Apple wasn't technically wrong, but that doesn't make it the right thing to do. And so I just think, like, who needs this headache? And it leads into the next thing that we're going to talk about, which is they're just getting slapped around by the EU left and right anyway. So it's like, I don't know why they need this headache. Yes, Fortnite Epic was almost certainly going to go back on the agreement at some point. But even still, like, you could have taken action then. It's like...
And, you know, we talked a lot about the term malicious compliance, which I want to talk about, like, the default browser splash screen that is now live in the EU that everyone's complaining about with 17.4. There's malicious compliance. And then, like, this, I don't know if it just feels malicious. Like, it feels... And now I'm also not a lawyer. And so the fact that it was a U.S. court ruling that Apple could do whatever it want. And I want to share this one other article. It was Mac Rumors. I guess Apple shared this statement with Mac Rumors and probably others. That was the original statement I read. And then Epic's response: in terminating Epic's developer account, Apple is taking out one of the largest potential competitors to the Apple App Store, which is a little, I mean, self-gracious. I mean, we'll, who knows if it would be the biggest competitor. They are undermining our ability to be a viable competitor and showing other developers what happens when you try to compete. But there was a statement where Tim Sweeney is saying this is against the DMA. Tim Sweeney is claiming that what Apple is doing by blocking their Swedish developer account is in direct contradiction of the Digital Markets Act in the EU. Do we know if that's true? Like, is this actually, like, does Apple have to allow it because it's in the EU?
So I don't. Article. Okay, so Epic did send me a statement, and it's mostly okay. their newsroom post with some additional color, including all of those emails. And it says, so I'm just going to assume that this is true because I have not read all of the DMA, but it says Article 6, Subsection 4 of the DMA says the gatekeeper shall allow and technically enable the installation and effective use of third-party software applications or software application stores using or interoperating with its operating system, a bunch of other things. So I think, generally speaking, neither of us are lawyers, but the idea where it says shall is like you have to do this thing as opposed to may, which is like you can decide to do this thing. And if you go on and read the rest of that of their statement, I think Epic actually brings up a reasonable point, which is they say if Apple maintains its power to kick a third-party marketplace off iOS at its sole discretion, no reasonable developer would be willing to utilize a third-party app store because they could be permanently separated from their audience. So what they're saying is, why would Spotify put their app in a third-party app store if that app store could just poof, be gone at any time and be then they'd be separated from? So I do think that that's a certainty is an important thing for developers, for Apple, for customers, for users. Right. I just think, like, I just go back to, do you need this headache? Is it a bigger headache to have Epic do what they're going to do in the EU alone? Or is it a bigger headache that now we're talking? This case was over, right? They sued, they countersued. We got to see Tim Cook on the stand. We, you know, the judge basically gave a victory to Apple. Then, you know, it went up through the courts and essentially all of it was affirmed with the exception of the one thing which said you have to, you know, anti-steering, you know, you had to stop doing that thing. Yeah. And we're done with it. Epic was going to do their store. They were going to collect 50 cents every time an app was downloaded. Like, think about the money that they are like giving up. They're just saying nope, because and they're going to have to deal with this. And I would be very surprised. I'm sure that the European Commission have to allow. I don't know how any of that works. That just seems like the only logical outcome at this point. Yeah. So if you're going to have to do it anyway, why are we doing
this? From the outside, again, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the ins and outs. It does feel more spiteful than, and what, you know, what Phil Schiller said in that email was, you know, this might jeopardize the security of the iOS platform. Like, that is like pretty intense, which I remember you talked about. You had heard Craig Federighi talk at the Web Summit, where he was very vocal about, you know, sideloading will destroy, or, you know, well, I forget what the exact word was.
It will set your house on fire was, I think, the quote. Well, maybe not that. That wasn't the exact quote, but it was not good. It was going to be very, very, very bad.
Very against sideloading. And so, like, we get it. Like, we get it. And Apple has no problem communicating the possible risks to users. Like, I'm sure that there would be, you know, we've seen screenshots where there would be a ton of splash screens if you were going to download a third-party app marketplace where Apple is telling you basically, like, don't do this. This is dangerous. Don't do this. Like, Apple has no problem. You know, they would do that. It feels a little exaggerated, maybe, is the right word, to say, like, this will, like, breach the security of iOS, which, again, even with the Digital Markets Act and third-party app marketplaces, Apple still gets to mandate things like sandboxing for apps. And so I don't think they would, even if there was something malicious in a game, again, I'm not a developer either, but it doesn't seem like that would be as big of a risk as Phil Schiller is making it out to seem. So,
yeah.
And just as a broad, like a big picture, it's not a great look on Apple.
No.
Like, it just doesn't look great, especially with the $2 billion fine from the EU, which we could talk about in a second.
Yeah.
And just all the, this 17.4, like all this mess kind of thing. I don't know. It just doesn't, it's not a good look.
Yeah. And I actually think that's a good segue, because I don't think you can separate this action by Apple from its response to the the fine that the EU has just issued, right. The European Commission. There is a difference, I guess, between the EU and the European Commission. The European Commission is like the government of the EU, whatever. Did you read their entire statement on this too? So Apple, I'm sure you were going to set this up, so I apologize for jumping forward, but I actually think that Apple's statement in response to being fined $2 billion, right? And essentially what happened was Spotify, I think it was like 2019, filed a complaint against Apple. And the reason was that they felt that it was unfair that they could not tell their customers that they could sign up on the web because right. Apple has a streaming service called Apple Music that directly competes with Spotify. So it's kind of like Apple's like, I can take your $10 subscription for Apple Music, or you can sign up for Spotify and I still get $3. It's just like, wait, that doesn't seem fair that you just get the money no matter which streaming service people sign up for, especially when you have one. So of course, would have had to charge $13 to make the same amount of money as Apple. So they basically complained it was an unfair competition. And if you've used Spotify, you haven't been able to sign up in the app. You have to have a Spotify account that you go to the web to sign up for. So they filed this complaint. It went through all of this process. And as a result, Apple was fined $2 billion and ordered to no longer prevent music streaming services from posting their prices in the app and then directing people to go and do them elsewhere. The funny thing about it was we heard about this a couple of weeks ago. I think we even mentioned it on this podcast that Apple was about to get fined $500 million. And it's interesting because that was the Financial Times, which always is the place where these types of things in the EU are leaked. And it's almost as if they leaked that they were going to fine them $500 million, and a bunch of people were like, no, that's not enough. Keep going. And so they came back and they actually issued the fine, and it was $2 billion. Yeah. And so Apple published a response, and I am working on a piece I haven't published yet, but there are over 1,500 words in this response, and 52 of them deal with the European Commission's response, and all the rest of them are about Spotify. All the rest of the words, and there's only four words in this piece that matter, which is Spotify pays Apple nothing. That's actually a subhead in the section where they talk about it. And so when you read that, when you read how angry they are at Spotify, it is very hard to look at the Epic thing and just not see
Spotify. And if you look at the last 6 months to a year, you look at the Apple Watch Series 9 and Ultra 2, which is now shipping with one less feature than announced.
Yep.
Because Apple doesn't want to pay Massimo about for a sensor. This situation with Epic Games, the $2 billion against the Spotify thing, overall, not a good look. You know, even if the Spotify thing is going to happen either way, I could be wrong, but I feel like if they had just allowed Epic Games to do this thing, which is only in the EU and which is like part of the DMA that they, you know, which it's just law now.
Yeah.
It would have been better. Like, it just would have been better look on Apple. I think it would have been rather than have this whole dust up, it was interesting when Apple had the newsroom about the MacBook Air, the M3 MacBook Air. It was like 45 minutes before that, there was a newsroom about the DMA, I think, in 17.4. And then it was like, M3 MacBook Air. It's like, we see what you're doing. Just like how originally when Apple first published about the DMA, it was like a late Thursday after we recorded this show.
Yep.
I'd be curious if you feel like Tim Sweeney is being genuine here, but he posted, many folks on here think of me as an Apple hater. This is Tim Sweeney talking of Epic Games. Nothing could be further from the truth. There's no other group of designers and engineers on earth who can build as great products as Apple when they are directed towards that end. The woes begin when they are directed not to.
So I'll take Tim Sweeney at his face for a second. I don't know if he's a hater or not, but I know that he very much does not like Apple's business model, right? And there are a lot of developers that's true with. I moderated a panel at Web Summit a year or so ago with the CEO of Brave Browser and then Andy Yen, who's the CEO of Proton, who are both a part, Proton Mail, Proton VPN, both of them are a part of the Coalition for App Fairness, right? Which Spotify is also a part of. And they have been a driving force towards trying to get the regulation and trying to get Apple to open up the App Store and open up iOS more generally and stuff. And when you listen to them talk, it's like, yes, they love the iPhone. They think it's great that Apple has created such a great platform. They just don't like the way that they run their business. And I honestly think that's the biggest problem that Apple faces today, because you have Epic, who maybe Tim Sweeney doesn't look good in this, right? And Spotify doesn't look good in this. The European Commission doesn't look good in this.
But nobody looks good.
Hay doesn't look great in this. But think about all of the fights that Apple just keeps picking over and over. And I just don't know why. Like, what you make so much money. I'm not suggesting Apple doesn't deserve to make the money. I'm not even suggesting that Apple should make like willingly make less. I'm just saying, do the analysis. What does it cost you to have these fights? And surely that's more than you would be giving up if you just stopped holding on so tightly with a clenched fist to these rules and these policies that you created so long ago. Because I think the Spotify thing one is a no-brainer. Like, yeah, you probably shouldn't take a commission from Spotify just because they have a competing service, right? You also probably shouldn't take one from Disney Plus or Netflix, you know, Max or any of those. Right. You probably should let Kindle sell books on the iPad and not take a commission from it. Some of the fitness apps, the same thing is true. If Apple is Dropbox, if Apple is going to get into a business, they should just be like, yep, we're going to go into this business. So we're willing to forego the commission on the competitors.
It does feel like it's a hand tied behind the back of competitors.
Yeah.
And I feel it the most when I've talked about this on my movie podcast. If I ever want to watch something through VidAngel, because we're watching with the kids and I want to cut out certain things, I typically have to buy a movie on Amazon Prime Video, because that's what works with VidAngel. And every time I have to do it, it's annoying because I can't just go to the Amazon app, which I have all my saved info. I'm already logged in. I can't just buy a digital movie in the Amazon app, nor can you buy, you know, a book. I have to go to the Safari web browser and do the exact same thing. The only difference is it's more annoying to me as the user. And I think that's kind of the base level. If something is more annoying to the user, I feel like it is worth paying the money, meaning not taking as much money from a developer, from a company, to make things less annoying for the user. And I think this Epic Games, if Fortnite was still on the iPhone globally, my kids would be playing it on their devices.
Yep.
And if the core technology fee was a thing here in the United States and however the DMA is structured was actually here, Apple would actually be making more money here in the US off my kids playing Fortnite on their phones than they are now, because there's zero money. Like, there is no Epic Games app. You know, it just doesn't exist. And so I am like, it just feels a little bit like one of the richest companies in the world are holding a little tightly to like money.
It's money they feel entitled to, right?
Right.
It's money they feel entitled to. And again, like, both Steven and I love Apple, right?
Absolutely.
It's just, is it really, really worth it? And I feel like there's no one, it just does not seem like there's anyone at Apple who's saying, just doesn't fit. Like, what really is it going? And I think the counter argument to that is, if you think about trademark, right? If you have a trademark on a thing, you have to defend it absolutely, or else you'll lose it, right? Because if you don't defend it, if I open a restaurant and I just put the big giant golden arches on the top of it, and McDonald's doesn't come along and say, nope, you can't do that, after enough time, they can't come along and be like, you can't do that, because I'll just be like, I did this for 6 years and no one said a word. What do you mean? You obviously don't care about this. So I feel like Apple is like, no, we literally won't budge an inch until we are forced to by a bulldozer, and then we'll move only an inch, and then we'll move an inch more, and then we'll move an inch more. It's like, why don't you just like move? Just get out of the way. It's going to be fine. Stop getting hit by bulldozers. Yeah. It's going to be fine.
It is. And so the last thing I'll just throw in here is, you know, the other thing in the 17.4 was the default browser thing. And there's been some memes on this too, but Sebastian DeWitt posted this from the Halide camera team, Lux Camera. And this is the new splash screen in the EU. When I guess you update to 17.4 over there, you have to choose your default browser. I guess this is mandatory. Like, no matter what, you have to choose because the EU wants there to be choice. And so it's giving you a ton of different browsers to choose from, which I had never heard of a lot of these browsers. I didn't even know Opera was still around, but they make you choose your default browser on updates to 17.4. And like, I think this is a counterexample of when mandating choice like this might make a user experience worse. Like, this is not a great, probably, like, splash screen or choice. You know, if you don't know anything about web browsers, you're just kind of like a regular iPhone user, this splash screen is probably like anxiety inducing. Like, what am I choosing? Like, what am I supposed to do here? And notably, I guess to Apple's credit, that Safari is down the list. It seems like Firefox is the top choice, Ecosia, and then Microsoft Edge, DuckDuckGo, Onion Browser. Never heard of that. Anyway, this feels like this is what happens when a law mandated by an organization like the EC, the European Commission, makes the experience worse for users. And so there's nuance here.
And I mean, anyone can change their default browser. Like, you can change your default browser right now. You don't need a screen for that. What the reality, though, is no one does. No one changes their default browser. By far, everyone uses Safari. Right. What happened when they forced this, when on desktop, we went from Internet Explorer to now we have Chrome. Chrome is the default browser on everyone's computer. People just download it because, you know, yes, you got rid of Internet Explorer. Congratulations. Now we have a new monopoly on browsers, and it's just Chrome on desktop and it's Safari. Now, the funny thing about this is there's actually only three browsers on there. There's Safari, there's Firefox, and there's Chrome. Everything else is just a version of one of those things. Now, Safari, technically right now, they are all Safari, but the other thing that Apple did is allowed
different browser engines.
Yeah, to use their own browser engine. But guess what? Right? Like, except for Firefox.
They're all Chromium.
Except for Firefox and Safari. Edge, Chrome. Ecosia, well, I don't know for sure because they really do hate Google. They use Bing Brave. Search. Brave is Chrome. Chromium. I'm sure DuckDuckGo is Chromium. I'm sure, like, Opera, I think, is the, like, the Tor thing. Like, it's, like, if you're trying to access, like, the deep web or something like that. I don't... that's what the Onion browser is for. I don't know. I've never tried this myself. A bunch of people are trying to figure out, what did you say, the deep web? Don't Google it. Just trust me. It's just a thing. Anyway.
It's a weird time for all this, but... I guess this also means that the European Commission like approved Apple's like changes, because I thought that was also still up in the air.
They went in effect yesterday, right? March 6th, I think, was the deadline. So I guess we're going to find out.
We'll see. So anyway, it's been quite the drama. This is going to be an ongoing saga. I'm sure there'll be more court cases, but which we'll cover.
Yeah.
But let's talk about a lighter topic here, Jason. Let's run out the show. I had some other things here in the notes, but... those are not light topics either, and I don't even know about them enough to talk about it. So we'll go to our personal tech segment, Apple Maps versus Google Maps versus Wave. Curious what we know. And then for our bonus content, did you see Dune 2 yet?
I have not seen Dune 2 yet.
Okay, well, I have another topic I want to talk about. But anyway, so personal tech. Last week, we talked Apple Maps versus Google Maps. Obviously, a lot of you reviewed and said Apple Maps default. A couple Waze users out there. Jason, what is your go-to Maps application?
I use Apple Maps. Like, I've been using it since it sucked, and it doesn't suck anymore, and so I use it. I should be careful. I think my mom listens to this podcast, so I should just choose my words more carefully. But I use Apple Maps because it no longer is bad. It's better now. Google Maps is fine. I don't really care. It's just like the convenience. Of course, I'm making the argument for why Apple's big, terrible monopoly. But if I search for something and it pulls it, it's going to open it in Apple Maps, right? Like, it's just the way that it works. If I tap a link in Fantastical, it's going to open it in Apple Maps. And guess what? Apple Maps is actually really good now. Like, it has not gotten me lost in probably 13 or 14 years, so it's fine. Like, I'm not worried about it. There were times when it would send you down roads that didn't exist, and that was bad.
Sure.
But I use it. I do use Waze often in our car because, you know, the Tesla has the built-in navigation, but it's Waze has some features that are really useful if you're going on a long road trip. Like, it'll tell you when there are cops in the median, it'll tell you when there's an accident up ahead, it tells you all those things. And so I do prefer that, although Apple Maps technically Apple has that as it. Well people just don't do it.
I do.
There's a type of user that chooses Waze, and they are the people that are constantly like tapping that little button to say there's a thing. The people in Apple Maps don't really do
but
that.
I do see like hazard ahead, speed check ahead, you know, in Apple Maps, like in the CarPlay thing. I see all that happen, which, to be clear, Google bought Waze.
Yes, correct. Yeah, but they're still completely separate, though.
They're completely separate, also two different apps. So like you, I've also used Apple Maps ever since it stunk. Because
I appreciate you saying that for my mother's sake, yeah.
Exactly. I actually did a video on this almost a year ago now, and I actually found like the general opinion about Google Maps versus Apple Maps. More people actually are starting to use Apple Maps, just like non-tech people, because the Google Maps interface started to get like really messy. And you know, like if you go, I'm gonna go to Google Maps here. There's suggestions in this like drawer. There's lots of tabs on the bottom, and you know, you got the quick searches up here, which is okay. But then also like just trying to like get directions or add a stop, it can be a little cumbersome sometimes. And I just know this because I don't use it regularly, but I did it for a video. And so I do feel like Apple Maps is good, like you're saying, and that's my default. I use it all the time. I will say there are still sometimes businesses don't know that you have to claim your business in Apple Maps if you want to like get the address on there and make it searchable and all this kind of stuff. And so if you do own a business out there and you have not done it, there's a website. I think it's Maps Connect or something.
I'm sending you a link. Because I did write about this. I'm sending you a link that you can, last January, but in Apple Business Connect, you can do all of those things and you can control how you appear in Apple Maps, Siri, Safari, and Wallet. So there you go.
Right, exactly. So if you own a business or there's just a business you love whose information is still not like in Apple Maps or not accurate, have them do this. It's free. They can add nice pictures. And It's still kind of annoying when you have to look at pictures for a lot of locations because Apple still incorporates Yelp because they don't have their own database of photos just yet.
Right.
And so if you want to choose a picture, it like throws you over to the Yelp app. But Apple is trying to build its own database of photos of businesses. You can submit photos directly in Apple Maps for a business.
Yep.
And also thumbs up or thumbs down a business. And I do try to do that. Like if I find a new place, like I want to build up the whole Apple Maps database. But I do find its design, its simplicity, and now because it's actually good, I'm 100% Apple Maps. There are the rare occasions when like we're going on a trip, maybe it's a road trip for a few hours, and if there's traffic, sometimes there'll be an alternate route that Apple Maps just doesn't show you right away. Mm. And sometimes I wonder if it's like predicting traffic and saying this alternate route is not actually that much faster, so it doesn't even show it to you. But sometimes Google Maps will give you a couple other choices, like going around a section of highway. I experienced this with I-95 here in Florida, like when there's always traffic. And so Google Maps does a little bit more like that. And so what I will do, because I prefer Apple Maps in my CarPlay screen and on my phone, is I'll like look at the alternate route, go back to Apple Maps, and then like drop a pin on the alternate route.
Yeah.
And then add it as a stop in my directions to my final destination. And it will then reroute me around the highway or through the back roads. And so still not 100% there, but I really like it. I think it's good. I know there's some really faithful Waze users out there. I feel like when you talk to a Waze user, it's like always fanboy. Like there's never like a casual Waze user. It's
yeah,
always
no, that's
like,
true. You're right. Okay, I'll say that I hate the design of Waze, but I do think the functionality is better for the actual driving along the road and wanting to know what's happening, right? But I don't care about all the little faces of the other Waze users, like, and they never move. So it's like, is that where the Waze users died? They just marked the spot along the highway where all these, I don't understand at all.
Stones.
Yeah, I don't understand what that means. So I obviously don't use it enough to fully know. But here's a question related. If you're at your Mac and you need to look up something, do you use the Maps app or do you just go to like your browser and type maps.google.com?
No, I use the Maps app on my Mac.
Oh, you do?
So you go to Google for that?
All the time. 100% of the time I use Google Maps on my computer. I don't know why. It's just the thing that I do. I do occasionally open the Maps app when it's like, oh, you know, what's really cool is the, you know, the 3D fly through of the stadium in Vegas when the Super Bowl is happening or something. Like those kind of effects are really kind of neat. But what I have figured is like, I think that whatever they call Street View is better than Look Around, which is Apple's version, especially in like on the Mac and stuff. And so if you want to know like, what is it going to look like if I'm walking down the street or whatever, Google Maps, I do think that that's just a superior experience, mostly because it exists in a lot more
places. Exactly. Yeah, for sure. And like my house, because it was recently built, is still not on Apple Maps. Like the address is, but if you look at like the satellite view or the, you know, the just regular map view, there's just like no house there, you know.
I just figured you were one of those people who managed to get them to blur your thing out like the White House so that no one knows.
Top secret.
Steven's got some top secret YouTubing happening there. He doesn't want anybody to know about.
One last thing I will say on my iPhone, because if you do search for a business in Safari, it will show you by default, if Google's your default search engine, it'll show you the Google Maps business result. And if you tap the directions, it will take you to the Google Maps directions as opposed to Apple Maps. And there is an extension. I covered this in one of my videos about it's just great Safari extensions that you can get this extension and it will open those direction links in Apple Maps rather than Google Maps. And so even if you search in Google and you're looking like here is like I just searched for Apple Park. It would take it's a little bit of a drive, 41 hours, but I could get there. Okay. This is the Google Map result. If I click start, it will actually throw me over to Apple Maps. And so if a business comes up in a Google search and it has like directions to it, it will automatically open that business in Apple Maps rather than Google Maps. So it's a pretty cool extension. It's called Mapper. And yeah, highly recommend. I'll put a link to that video if you want to see it in action in the show notes. But all right, so we're going to talk about our bonus content. I want to ask Jason if he knows how the internet works across the oceans. which he does not.
I definitely do not.
So if you want to listen to the bonus episode.
Listen, Steven, I can't even get internet to come from my house into my office in the backyard. You think I understand how it goes across the ocean?
You have it going over like some kind of microwave frequency, right? It's traveling through
the air.
I have
an undersea cable that goes under the ground.
Oh, see, you know how it works. You know how it works. Anyway, if you want to support the show, you can listen to the bonus episodes and get ad-free versions of the show by supporting us directly on Apple Podcasts, or you can go to primarytech.fm, support us through Memberful. You can sign up for monthly or annually. There's people doing that all the time, and we really appreciate it. So you could do that just to support the show. And also, we'll mention again the great sponsor for this episode, OneTap. If you want a quick way to share links, text, or documents right from a third-party keyboard, create automations where it'll automatically go back to the default folders, all kinds of stuff. I use OneTap all the time to share links to my videos, websites, and this podcast. You can download OneTap at the link in the podcast episode show notes, primarytech.fm. You can also get the show notes there as well. Thanks to OneTap for sponsoring this episode. Thank you all listeners and viewers for your ratings, reviews, subscribes on YouTube. And now we'll go to the bonus episode and we'll catch you next week.